Coach, we haven't had a chance to talk to you since the Detroit game. I know you're probably starting to move ahead in your mind, but just to give us a little bit of a step back before we move forward, what do you do after a game like that? I mean, it's a preseason game. It's not a regular season game. What's your approach with the team after that?
About the same as it is on the other preseason games, really. Try to correct our mistakes, point out the things that we did well, either individually or as a team, and take some of the situations that came up and go over those, make sure that we all understand what we're doing there, and then turn the page and move on.
Yeah, after that game, a lot of people looked at it, whether they were analysts or fans, and said, well, this is as bad as this game was, 40-9, this is good for Belichick because it's an opportunity to teach and coach. Did you look at it that way? As an was that a positive byproduct of a game like that, that you have lots of bad football to say this is not what we want?
Yeah, well, I think every game is an opportunity, and no matter what happens in the game, it's an opportunity to teach from it and learn from it. So hopefully we did that.
You know, it was funny. They kept talking. I was listening to some of your ex-players. Chatham is on, and Fourier's on the broadcast, and they're saying, oh, well, this is a good opportunity to coach this situation. It's the quick change, and Bill's really going to like this opportunity. And then listening to you after the game, it didn't sound like you were all that happy with all the opportunities that you had. How do you balance that over the course of a game and then even afterwards?
Well, I mean, the situations are good. The ones that come up are great. We've practiced them, so now we have a chance to go out there and play them out and learn from them. There's obviously a lot of things that we didn't do well in the game. I mean, turned the ball over 4 times in the first quarter. Couldn't make a stop on defense in the second half. I mean, those aren't good.
Was that it? I mean, as you look back over it, I mean, maybe we're trying to overthink it a bit. Was that essentially the story of the game, just turning the ball over and it got out of control?
Well, I didn't think it was out of control at halftime. I mean, we were behind, but we a couple scores and we could have been right back in it, but we couldn't stop them. And then we had two of our first 3 series in the second half were 3-and-out, combined with a 80-yard touchdown drive and a 90-some-yard drive, whatever it was. So, I mean, that was pretty much the story.
You've mentioned that you got a lot of work to do as a team, which I guess would make sense for every team at this point. But are you where you would like to be, ahead of schedule, behind schedule? Where are you?
We don't have a schedule. I mean, we try to plan the way we want to install things going into the beginning of camp, but then we have to make adjustments and modifications going forward. And we just continually, on a week-to-week basis, talk about the things that we need to do that week and then structure the days so that we can try to get those things accomplished, as many as we can. The ones we can't get to, then we have to prioritize, and we do the ones that we feel are most important. The ones we can't get to, we either put them on the list for the following week, or maybe just try to touch on without really doing a thorough job of covering them if we have to prioritize.
When you say it's a priority to get one thing over another, is it plays? Is it situations? I mean, what sort of things are you putting in a priority order?
All those things. Things that we need to see, things that we need to see. Maybe because we haven't seen them. Maybe because we're going to see them. Things that we need to work on, regardless of who we play, just things that we need to do. Situations that we need to practice. Maybe we've covered them, but they haven't come up in a couple weeks. We need to hit those again. It's an infinite list. So there's always something. But we just have to prioritize it. How we want to practice certain groups, or try to, as we start to see different jobs on the team start to get. Looks like how they're going to be filled, who's going to do what, then maybe there are the other positions we need to see more of, or maybe we need to get certain people working together. So it's all of the above.
And that leads that's interesting. That leads to my question, my next question. It's a big week for you. The roster cut down. You got to get to certain numbers by certain times. Just tell us about that process. I mean, I know we're not thinking about 53 jobs. I mean, there are certain jobs that are obviously already taken, but as you try to fill these spots, how much time do you spend on just saying, all right, this guy is going to fill this position. Now we have 4 more or 5 more slots that we haven't accounted for, and that's going to take this amount of energy to figure out who it is. How much time is involved in just figuring out this roster, the back end of the roster?
Well, I'd say it's the entire roster. Probably, you know, at least a couple meetings a week, with maybe some other discussions along the way. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that you've got to take into consideration. The 45-man game day roster, the 53-man roster, the practice squad roster. You have to look at, I mean, you just have to be aware of what your salary cap situation is and you know, look into what your potential expenses are going to be during the season, because you're going to have to, somewhere along the line, replace somebody. I mean, I don't think everybody's going to be healthy for the entire season. I mean, I hope so, but that's just not realistic. So you've got to do some budgeting, and you have to take a look at where your depth is. So if you carry certain guys on the practice squad, maybe their depth, but then where does your depth come from at other positions where you might not have a player on the practice squad? Who could you get to the practice squad? Who's practice squad eligible? So all those kind of things. But, you know, a lot of them end up taking care of themselves. And that's, you know, it's let the players play, and somebody emerges ahead of somebody else, or sometimes injuries occur, or, you know, what have you. And then there's sometimes when you have to really, you know, make a decision based on the amount of information you have. Sometimes it's not as much as you like, but it's all what you have, and then you just have to do the best you can there.
Well, so along those
it's
lines,
a combination of all those things.
How do you judge a guy then who hasn't really been able to practice much or even play at all in a game? Some of the guys who've been injured really throughout camp.
Yeah,
how do you evaluate?
Those are always, yeah. All those are always the tough ones of, you know, do you want to, how much do you weight what you think the player can do, or maybe what he's done in the past, and where you think he'll be. It's what we have to do. It's not the ideal situation, but there's nothing. Whatever information we have, that's all we have. We have to make a decision with it.
And you talk about so many things to think about, so many layers of it. It could be overwhelming if you didn't have the experience. You've been doing this for a long time here. Is there something you look at now that doesn't overwhelm you that maybe did when you first started, or something you look at in terms of the constructing the roster now that you didn't realize it in, say, 2001, 2002, 2003?
Well, I think anytime you have coached special teams in this league, you really understand how that's, first of all, that's 66 players, six special teams times 11 guys, so that's 66 players. Which means you also have to have 66 backups somewhere along the line. So, you know, if one guy's on three or four teams and something were to happen to him, maybe you would have one person to replace him, but more likely it would take more than one. So when you start looking at all your depth in the kicking game, first of all the players that you have to put out there in the kicking game, and then your depth in the kicking game, and then tie that into your offensive and defensive units, you know, you can make a case for a lot of guys. It's not just, you know, a clear-cut 53 guys or 45 guys. I mean, there are certain guys that fill certain roles, and which role is more important, which role a guy can fill multiple roles, what guy can only fill, you know, maybe one or two roles, whatever those happen to be. So, and then really your practice squad and some of the guys that might not be on the roster, on the 45-man roster, are, you know, to a certain degree insurance, unless you think they're developmental players who will be roster players, 45-man roster players, but they're just not ready at this particular time, then that's another reason to keep them. But that's also an argument of, you know, keeping a guy like that versus a guy that could actually get out there and help you in some way immediately. So it's, you know, a combination of all of those things. But I think once you've coached special teams in this league, you have an appreciation for building a roster because of the impact that it has on the kicking game. I think it's a lot easier to put together a 24, 25, 26-man offensive or defensive roster, whatever it is, than it is to put together a 53-man roster that also incorporates offense, defense, and all the aspects of the kicking game.
Well, Coach, you get one more preseason game this week, Thursday night, and then we'll be getting ready for week one of the regular season. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
All right, sounds good. All right, Mike. Thanks.
All right, Bill.